Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Hi, and thank you for joining me today on the Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman. Joining us today is Julie B. Julie is a business consultant, professional speaker, leader of leaders, podcast host, and entrepreneur. Thank you for joining us today, Julie.
Phil, I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's start off with, what does success mean to you?
That is a pretty big question, and I hope to make this answer pretty straightforward. So when I think about success, I think on a macro level, on the big picture level, I think success is really being able to define success for yourself. And when I define success, what I realized over the years is that success and goals are two totally different things. Because as a business owner and as an entrepreneur and all of the things that you listed, when you achieve a goal, you usually there's something else that comes next, right? You have another goal you want to achieve. And Absolutely. if you get caught up in my goal equals my success, you're never going to feel successful. So, and I learned that the hard way. And so now success for me is more about a place or a state of mind or just a general sense of being that I feel really good in and where I feel like I can arrive and be there for a little while. So to answer your question straight with a straightforward answer, on a daily basis, success for me means I do three things. I read, I meditate, and I laugh. And if I'm doing those three things on a daily basis, I'm feeling pretty daggone successful. And then on the bigger picture, honestly, success means that I can either go to the beach or to Disney World whenever my partner and I want to go to those destinations. So those require a little bit of planning, but I mean, I've literally woken up on a Monday morning and said to her, we need to go to the beach this weekend. And we go to the beach on Thursday. And that is kind of the epitome of success for me, which is a lot different than, you know, of course, when my book comes out, I have goals for it. Of course, I have goals for my business that have to do with money and, you know, growth and wealth and all of that. But at the end of the day, I know that when I achieve those goals, I'm going to have another goal right behind it. And that does not equal success for me.
No, that's very well put, because people, especially successful people, they're always pushing themselves a little bit further, mm-hmm. a little bit further. And if you're not enjoying the journey along the way, then you're always going to be unhappy. And so I think mm-hmm. that's incredibly important to find, you know, success in daily life and not necessarily just a destination marker.
Yeah, it's easy to combine the two. And I learned that the hard way. I was chasing money, chasing, you know, keeping up with the Joneses type of things, certain cars, you know, wanting to have vacation properties and all of that type of stuff. And I never felt successful when I would achieve it. I was like, okay, what's next? And I finally realized it's not the goal that equals success. You've got to define success from something more internal for yourself.
That's great. So for our audience listening, you have a kind of a unique background in a wide range of areas, right?
Yeah.
So CPA to marketing to mm-hmm. Podcast host, business consultant. Can you kind of walk us through briefly your journey, a little bit about you?
Yeah, so I'll give you the abridged version as much as possible. So I did the typical, went to college, was good at math, so decided to become an accountant because mom said you'll always have a job if you get an accounting degree, which is probably still true. Out of college, got a job in accounting, got my CPA license, and I think a year after I got my CPA license, I was like, I don't want to be an accountant. So for first lesson in life, don't let somebody else define success for you. And so at that point, I was working for a small business, and I got another job with an even smaller company and worked directly with a business owner and just kind of fell in love with business ownership. And in 2008, I lost my job in the financial crisis and decided to start a business in marketing. So I started Be Smart Social Media, which is my marketing agency still today, and worked on that for about 12 years, only doing that. And in 2020, you know, COVID happened, and I decided it was time for me to do something else. And so kind of through some serendipitous moments, I had a client email me and tell me it was the time to start my next thing. And then a friend of mine took a video I recorded and started a podcast for me.
Wow.
And that became a pretty successful podcast. So I kind of started a second business without really meaning to.
Sure. That's cool.
Yeah. And that has led into now, I still have my marketing agency. I have a team there that runs it. I'm involved in it about 5 hours a week. And the rest of the time I'm doing things like this, trying to grow my personal brand, be a consultant. I have a book coming out in 2024. You know, just the kind of things that you see individuals do. I'm getting speaking engagements and just really want to help business owners. That's really where my passion is. I love talking to business owners, and I just have a lot of fun working with them, helping them, and seeing them grow. So that's what I'm doing.
That's great. Mm-hmm. So I want to start talking a little bit about something that you have spoken on a lot and have a lot of experience on, and that's burnout, entrepreneur burnout. Did you see the Joe Rogan podcast interview with Mark Zuckerberg?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Something that was oddly relatable with him was that, you know, picking up the phone next to your bed first thing in the morning and getting that gut punch to your stomach, as he described it. Mm-hmm. And then he talks about, you know, things to shut off his brain. He was doing running initially, but it wasn't working. It wasn't kind of burning off the stress. So he got an MMA because it's, you know, it gave him a chance to focus his energy, efforts, and brain on something else for a little bit of time. And I could really relate to that as an entrepreneur. Last night, I'm guilty of it. I had an idea pop in my head as I'm laying there in bed, and I had to reach over, grab my phone, and like pop it in there real quick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, shutting off that brain and having that relaxing time is very important for, you know, preventing burnout. Do you have any tips, feedback, thoughts on somebody like me who just can't shut that brain off and can't, you know, get away from their business in their head?
I think, yeah. I mean, my number one thought is don't try to fight it. Learn how to work with it, because I think that I'm like that. Most business owners have that kind of, they're always thinking about their business. And I think there's a lot of, pushback to that thought, but I've found that when you kind of accept that, yeah, I mean, my life and my business it's really hard to separate those two. When you give yourself the permission to just say, okay, yeah, like I'm a business owner, these things run together a lot, that's usually the first step, because, you know, we're all told to turn off our phones, we're told all of these things, to shut off our brains, to meditate, to do all of these things. And while I think all of those things are great advice, it's coming from a place of, I think, boundaries that are somewhat unrealistic for business owners to have all the time. So the first piece of advice I have is really, if you know that about yourself, don't fight against it. Now, when it comes to, you know, laying in bed and having ideas, what I've done that's helped me a lot is I will set aside, even if it's just like 5 or 10 minutes a day, to literally just think and write down what I think about. And that has helped me more than anything with that specific problem where you're like laying in bed and you're having all these ideas and you know, you're thinking about work when you're trying to go to sleep. I found if you set aside time to just give yourself some time to think most days, and it doesn't have to be every day, business owners need that. And that's how I've addressed that. And I do things like put my I don't keep my phone right next to the bed. It's kind of across the room, so I can't check it the first thing in the morning. And then I also keep a notepad next to my bed. If an idea does come up, I write it down and then I can put it away. But giving yourself time to think throughout the day, it can really help address it before you even get into that spot where you're trying to wind down for the night or go to bed.
Yeah. And that's smart, having that dedicated outlet to do it. Cause otherwise the only time that you have is when you're sitting there in bed, you know, right before you go to bed. And that's really smart. Yeah. I tried the moving my phone away, and then what do I do in the middle of the night? I get up out of bed, go over my phone so I can enter it in there. So.
Well, and there's some people that that's just not realistic for. Like if you have, I know, you know, parents who have kids in college, they're going to keep their phone next to their bed and the ringer on. So again, I think while the advice that's out there is, I'm not saying it's the wrong advice, I think the first thing you always have to do is know yourself. And if you know that sleeping with your phone across the room is just going to end up with you ending up over there in the middle of the night getting your phone, then you got to kind of back it up and think through how you are during the day, because then that's where I think you can really start to address that, you know, address that habit that you want to break.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll talk a little bit about culture and creating a company culture. And for me, it kind of goes hand in hand with that employee burnout thing, because I establish my culture and it's kind of who I am. And you'll see the people that I hire share similar beliefs to me and work ethic and values and that sort of thing. And so I'm constantly trying to keep a good work ethic inside the company that just is natural, but not a culture that becomes almost cult-like where people feel overworked. And I've seen these companies where, you know, they talk a lot about the family culture and the business and, you know, everything from like company barbecues and lunches and bring your family there and stuff like that. And my concern with a lot of that is still establishing like a work-life balance where there's a difference between when I'm at work to when I'm off. And my question is around establishing a solid business culture, but still within boundaries so that your employees and yourself can still have a little bit of that work-life balance as well. Do you encounter that with people and specifically entrepreneurs?
Yeah. And the one that comes up a lot in small businesses, and really when I say small businesses, I mean, they could be anywhere from, you know, $150,000 a year in revenue to $150 million in revenue. So, but what I see is this idea of family in the business. And I think that, and not, you know, my brother works for me, not that type of thing. Well, that might be the case, but a lot of small business owners will say, our workplace feels like a big family. And there are pros to that, but there are also cons to that. And I think honestly, that is, you have to be very careful. If that's how you're defining your culture, you have to have some even more boundaries around what that means, because families talk to each other on the weekends. Employees probably don't want to talk to their boss, you, the small business owner, on the weekends. So you've got to establish kind of what that actually means if you're using that as part of your culture. But I mean, in terms of work-life balance, you know, it really depends on how, what you want that to look like, not only for yourself, but for your team. So, you know, for that specifically, I mean, you might have, the way you reiterate that is, you know, how much paid time off do you offer? How much, you know, is your paid time off required to be used? Like for my employees, it's use it or lose it every year. I don't let it accrue. And I do that because I want them to have a work-life balance. So those are some things in terms of like actually implementing your culture. Now, and trying to protect that work-life balance. What I really love to do to reiterate culture points. So just an example, one of our culture points is confidence. And one of the ways that I reiterate that is obviously, you know, I act with confidence, and confidence means also being able to say, I don't know sometimes. That's part of kind of what we talk about internally. But I will sometimes start a meeting with, you know, one of our core values is confidence, and so-and-so really showed up this showing really embodied that core value point through this action the other day with one of our clients. And I just wanted to talk about that for a minute. That's bringing it up at the very beginning of a meeting and giving an example. And by doing that, you almost create like a, what I call a culture playbook, not only for yourself, but for your employees, so that, you know, they have real life examples of how somebody acted to live into, to embody the core values of your business. And that can really help as you grow to make sure that everybody's on the same page in regards to that.
Yeah, no, that's great. Mm-hmm. You're actually showing that beyond just, I think a lot of times in a company, we focus just on the results, specifically in sales and things like that. And we're not focusing on some of the behaviors. Yeah. And that's
with everything. I think with almost everything, there's leading indicators and there's lagging indicators. You know, we learn those in business. A leading indicator is maybe how many sales calls you make a week, and a lagging indicator of that would be your sales revenue. But I think there's those actually apply to everything. They apply to success. They apply to culture. You know, if you start a meeting like that, every staff meeting you have, you're going to see that culture show up. So your leading indicator is going to be how many meetings you start with an example. Your lagging indicator with your culture is going to be, yeah, it's showing up and I can actually see it. Same thing with success. I would say those items that I listed, the thinking and reading time and the meditating time every day, those are my leading indicators of success. And then being able to go on vacation is my lagging
one. Lag. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also probably keeping some of that stress and that burnout at bay is probably a lag indicator as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And the interesting thing about burnout is a lot of business owners don't even know they're in it the first few times they go through it until something major breaks. And sometimes that's in the business and sometimes that's with them personally. And I'm talking like big stuff, you know, divorces, heart attacks, going out of business type of things. So, you know, my goal when I talk about burnout, it's not so much to get people to avoid it or try to not go through burnout, which, I mean, yeah, that's ideal. But I think the reality is, as business owners, I think a lot of us will experience burnout at one point or another. So again, it's kind of about being aware of your tendencies, of your habits, of the things that mean you are approaching burnout. For example, one of my things is when I say, I just have to get through X, whether it's, you know, a project, a date, something. If I'm saying I just have to anything, I'm getting close to burnout. And so I'm very aware of that. And when I hear myself say that, I'm like, okay, hold up. Let's see if we can prevent a full on burnout here. So I think it's more helpful to know what your red flags or your signs are that you're either in the initial stages of burnout or getting close to it, so that you can correct course before you just try to like power through it. Cause there's some things you just can't power through. You know, you've got to kind of back it up and say, okay, I need to really focus on some other things right now to take care of myself and to take care of my business.
Absolutely. So something I'm always cautious of in business is, you know, whether I need to bring on new talent from outside of the company or teach those skills internally. And I have this constant battle between the two, because I think there's you could have arguments for both sides, right? A lot of times the employees inside, they understand the culture, they understand the product very closely, the customers and all that sort of stuff. And so if I can teach them the skills, then, you know, then they'll grow internally. Whereas on the other side, if I only hire internally, I'm missing that bringing in new skill sets, new ideas and things like that from outside of the company. Somebody like me looking at both those areas, what advice would you have for them?
Yeah. So from your internal, your existing employee's perspective, I like to do two things in that situation. And I was actually in that situation a few years ago with one of my key employees, trying to decide whether she was going to become a more of a manager or kind of stay where she is. And so there's two things that I really like to rely on. One are, there's a couple of assessments that I use, and I do those assessments when they come in as an employee. So I always have those. And what I found about these specific assessments that I use is it really helps me get to know the employee a lot faster. And I actually share my own results with the employees so that they get to know me a lot faster. So there's a two-way street there. They see my, you know, where I fall on those assessments, and I get to see where they fall on those assessments. So I usually go back to those assessments to help me review if the person is going to have kind of the, not necessarily the technical skills, because I feel like in a lot of industries, you can teach people how to do, you know, a lot of things through experience, but more of the, I guess I would say soft skills, like, are they resilient? How much tact do they have? You know, those are the types of things that my assessments look at. And so I use those. And then I also talk to the employee, because they may not have an interest in being promoted or doing a different job at the organization. You know, now hopefully if it's not a situation where you're trying to, hopefully it's a new role you're filling and you're not like just trying to move them into a different role because you have to, that's a different scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two, that's what I would do with the employee. And then if based on that, you know, if you don't think they're the right fit for the new role, then you go outside and hire. But I would almost say that I feel like most business owners kind of have a gut feeling about this from the start, and don't ignore the gut feeling, because usually our gut reactions are right about most of these types of things. So if you are going to go to hire someone, then, you know, again, I think use those assessments when you can, and you just see what's out there. Cause yeah, again, like sometimes you need to bring in new people to bring in new ideas. So, you know, it also depends on kind of what the role is, but that's how I would approach that question in general.
Yeah, because then you have the other side to promoting employees, which is the Peter principle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rising to the level of their incompetence, and where mm-hmm. you get to this point where you promote people out of your job. They mm-hmm. start off, they were really great in their role, and you mm-hmm. said, all right, I'm going to promote this person. I'm going to promote mm-hmm. this person until they reach their ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've all been in companies where you lose great people, and maybe they were great as an individual contributor, but mm-hmm. now you're forcing them into a role that's outside of their comfort zone. Do you see that a lot in businesses as well?
I do. And I'll tell you what I see. It's not so much promoting somebody to the level of their incompetence. It's promoting somebody to be a manager or a leader that doesn't have strong managing or leading skills. Usually what I see is you have somebody who is fantastic at doing tasks. They're the best you've ever seen. They're way better than you ever were at doing the work. And you get it into your brain that they would be a great manager, or yeah. they would be a great VP, or they would be a great fill in the blank. And then, and the person is like, yeah, I want to do that for whatever reason. You know, they want to grow in their job. They want to, you know, make more money, or they want a promotion, you know, whatever the reason is. And they think also they're going to be really great at it. And then they get into that role and they can't let go of the work.
Yeah.
They can't delegate. They micromanage because they were so good at it. And there's a couple, you know, some people just are not cut out to be managers or leaders. There's nothing wrong with that. If you're good at your job and you're okay staying where you are, then, you know, some people want that. That's what they're happy working their time and then going home and not having the stress of managing and leading other people. So I think that in small businesses, especially, anytime you can give somebody, if you're thinking they might be a good for a promotion, somebody who already works for you, give them opportunities to manage and to lead before you actually put them into that role. You know, have them run a staff meeting, have them, you know, be the team lead of a project, hand something off to them that maybe you would normally lead, and you want somebody else to eventually come in and lead. See how they interact with the other people that they will be leading before they're actually in that role, because that's what I don't know how many times I've heard people say that people I know who work in corporate America, man, I was just so much happier when I was just doing the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not about them being incompetent in the skill. Most likely they just haven't been trained to manage and lead and let go.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being a really solid individual contributor. And I think more companies need to have a career path for those as well, beyond just promoting,
mm-hmm.
Having a career path for those individuals as well. So,
yeah, absolutely. Give them opportunities to grow that isn't necessarily growing in title, up the ladder. You want to give them opportunities to grow that isn't just that.
Yeah, isn't just a leadership. And mm-hmm. and then regarding leadership, I think that's a skill that needs to be taught as well. Internally, we have a leadership training program for those individuals that are interested in getting into a leadership. And I know there's a lot of companies and that's something that you help people explore mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get to a point in your company where you want to start promoting leaders, it's a good idea to start looking outside and say, hey, if I can't develop that program internally, maybe I find someone who can.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting. I have what I call a key employee coaching program. And what that does is it basically, the goal is I coach the key employee, and it's to help the business owner to feel like they have other leaders who can make decisions. Because a lot of the times what we get into as business owners is we become a leader of managers. And, that means we're still managing a lot of the work. And over and over again, I was hearing business owners talk about they have this great team of people, they got all these great people, and yet they still felt like they were busier than ever. And it came down to the business owner just felt like they still needed to be in every single room, every major decision. And there's a balance to that. But I think just even if it's just to have another person, another leader established in the business who you can talk to as a leader, that is so important for business owners to have. And the more they can kind of let go of some of that with guardrails, with boundaries, I think the less busy those individuals, the leaders, the business owners tend to feel.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to touch on real quick imposter syndrome. I know you've mm-hmm. talked about it. You've written articles on it. And I think if you're somebody that pushes your boundaries in your career and in life, you will experience imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to hear a little bit about your thoughts on imposter syndrome. Have you felt it in your own life and how you deal with that?
Yeah, it's a constant companion for me, it's an interesting thing to think about, because I talk about it a lot and I share ways to deal with it. But it's easy for me to have it kind of creep in and say, like, you're not this, you're not that, you're a fraud, blah blah blah, which is just self-confidence. And you really have to have some boundaries with imposter syndrome. I think one, it's important again to have an awareness, like, oh, this is imposter syndrome that's coming in, because if you don't
label it.
Yeah, label it. Like, yeah. Oh, okay, I see you, all right. And honestly, what I do is I have what I call the I'm a badass file. And almost every time something happens that makes me feel good about myself as a business owner, as a, author, as fill in the blank, I will, if it's an email, if it's a text message, if it's an award, I will literally, now I'm a little bit old school about this and I, you know, waste paper, I guess, but I will print that out and then I will date it and like handwrite a little note to myself and say, this is why this made me feel good about myself. And so when imposter syndrome strikes me, I go to that file. It's out. I'm pointing because I know exactly where it's laying. Yeah. I will go to that file and I will read through just a few things. And it just helps me remember like, oh yeah, I really do help people. Like I really do help business owners. And then I have earned my place here. You know, I have my place at the table here. And here's the proof. That's how I deal with it. And that's what I usually advise anybody who's struggling with it, not just business owners. It just really helps to have those reminders close.
Yeah.
When you feel that imposter syndrome.
No, I think that's such a great idea. Not only from the imposter syndrome, but you know, as an entrepreneur, if you're a good entrepreneur and you have employees working for you, you're complimenting them regularly, mm-hmm. telling them, you know, giving them feedback and that, but you don't always get that as an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of that burnout could be, you know, I'm getting all of the negative, you know, and the decisions and stuff like that, but am I doing a good job? You know?
Yeah.
And I think having that file is important.
You know, it's lonely at the top. It really is. And what's interesting as a business owner, it's really lonely at the top. There aren't many other places except for other business owners where you can go to get support. And even then, like you have to do the work to curate that network, to curate that like really tight inner circle of people who, one, understand what you are dealing with, and two, you feel like you can share some things that you just wouldn't share with other people with them. And I think that's also really important. That takes longer to build, but it's so crucial. You know, some people call them mastermind groups. Some people say they're CEO roundtables, whatever it is, to find that network and to really nurture it, which means, you know, you're there for those individuals when they need you too.
Sure.
That is also how you can, you know, overcome imposter syndrome, because sometimes honestly, yeah, you just need another business owner to say, you know what? Yeah, you're a badass. Like, and this is what I've seen you do and you rock. So, okay, like let's go, you know, sometimes you need that. And it's really helpful when you have a group of people that understand, that are there, and, you know, they're not just there to be a cheerleader. They're not just there to kind of build you up. But when you need it, you know, they'll be there for you.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Julie. For anybody listening out there, how do they follow you? How do they get in touch with you? Tell us.
Yeah. So you could go to my website, thejuliebee.com. And I'm also all over social media. And yes, my last name is B-E-E, like a honeybee. So you can find me out there. Most of my handles are thejuliebee as well.
Thank you so much, Julie, for your time. And for the listeners out there, we'll see you next time.